then once I saw how the cuts worked and how the writing worked and how you had to show everything for dialogue, unlike in a nonfiction narrative where I can spend pages if I want to telling the reader the history of the war on drugs, in our show, we had to show the impact of it through story, through scene, through dialogue. Disney and Hulu really went all out to have this show made. I'm really proud of it.
They're not bad.
We can do better. How's our video testimonial coming?
A bit slow. The drug is so new, there's not a lot of people who can testify to it at this point.
Then find some.
Yes, sir.
Physicians need to know it could take its place next to penicillin as one of the most important in the history of medicine. Let's hold more weekend seminars to explain to physicians how truly revolutionary this drug is.
Do you see the miniseries as sort of an extension, Beth, of the message in Dope Sick, the book? And are you hoping that it maybe reunites awareness and conversation about addiction to prescription drugs?
Absolutely. And that was the vision from the get-go. When I first met with Hollywood producers about, there was actually a bidding war for Dope Sick, and I met with them all. And I chose to partner with Warren Littlefield, who, he does Handmaid's Tale. He was the creator of Seinfeld. And he was so interested in the fact that we could use the Klieg light of Hollywood to really shine a light on this important issue, which only got worse by the month with COVID. We've now lost 96,000 people to a drug overdose in the last year alone, and it gets worse. Every month, that number goes up.
Dr. Fenix, did more than 1% of your patients become addicted to OxyContin? Dr. Fenix.
I can't believe how many of them are dead now.
Every episode is better than the one before, and you really are hooked into what's going to happen with these people.
What do you think of the TV business?
I think it's a tough business. Everybody kind of works for themselves, and you might have a ton of work one year and not any the next, and a lot of it's like kind of out of your control. We got really lucky with this to get a green light. By getting Barry Levinson on early, that allowed him to then hire Michael Keaton, because everyone wants to work with Barry Levinson. He's the master. And then you get Michael Keaton on, and then you can get quality people because everybody wants to work with him. So the whole cast is first rate. Rosario Dawson kills it. Caitlin Dever, they called her Little Meryl, short for Meryl Streep on set. She was that good. And I think the scenes with Caitlin Dever and Michael Keaton, John Hogenacker, not as well known as the others, but he plays Abingdon U.S. Assistant Attorney Randy Ramsire. He brings so much heart and good humor to the character that you're really rooting for this, David going up against Goliath.
Beth Macy is the author of the book Dope Sick and helped write and produce the miniseries on Hulu based on her book. I saw a brief interview with Michael Keaton on something, and he said that they'd be filming and he'd stop once in a while and he'd say, wait a minute, this really happened? There was all this pill pushing and all this really happened? Like he was said he was incredulous at times that it went to this length.
Yeah, and that's the real power of the show, because Michael Keaton has lost his nephew in real life to opioid overdose, so he had a heart for it. But then as he's portraying Dr. Samuel Fenix in the episodes, he's starting to piece together the story, and he's as shocked as everybody else. And so this is a slow brewing story that takes place over more than two decades. And what Dope Sick does so brilliantly, I think, is that you see these decisions being made in the boardroom. And then in the next scene, you see that decision playing out in Michael Keaton's doctor's office. And then you see him unintentionally addicting members of his community. And then it spreads from there. And that's a hard story to tell, even in a book, but the show covers, about 15 years of the story, and I think is a great primer for people to understand what's happening in the news today with the opioid litigation.
I thought it was good, at least, Beth, in the first episode, that they really go to lengths to really make you feel empathetic to the characters. The young female coal miner, she gets a back issue. Michael Keaton is the community physician, that they're good people, that they're not criminals. Was it important, do you think, to build that empathy for them so that when they get ensnared by opioids in later episodes, that you really feel for them?
Well, I come back to Richard Sackler's statement when crime first started being reported in the coal fields of Southwest Virginia, and the first people started bringing attention to this issue, including my colleague Lawrence Hammack at the, my former colleague Lawrence Hammack at the Roanoke Times. Richard Sackler said, it's been well documented, we have to hammer the abusers. They are the criminals and the culprits. So by continuing to stigmatize these people, which most Americans still do and view them as criminals rather than people with a medical condition deserving of care, we're following Richard Sackler's playbook. Richard Sackler shouldn't get to determine America's playbook. He addicted people for his own greed and then blamed them for getting them addicted.
We began looking at something that could be big.
What are we talking about?
OxyContin.
Specifically, Purdue Pharma, it's the company that makes it. They've been marketing the drug and pushing it on doctors as something that's non-addictive, when it clearly is.
Stigma is so entrenched at every level of our society, whether it's in our families or in our communities. You see it playing out with policies. You know, how many years did it take Roanoke to get a syringe services program because the police chief was against it? How many years is it going to take to have a drug court in town that allows medication-assisted treatment? And this happens. You get a community like I'm just turned in a new book about solutions to the crisis, and I spent a lot of time in the jail at Fairfax. I wasn't incarcerated. I was reporting. But what they've done there is they've totally flipped all of that old thinking on its ear, and they now start people OUD on medicine in jail, and they get them therapy, and they get them connected with peer coaches who meet them when they get out of jail and take them to sober living. And that's what we've got to do. If we're going to turn around our declining life expectancy in this country, we've got to start treating these folks like people with a medical condition and not simply criminals. By the way, if we do that, crime will go down. I mean, that's been determined in every country that's done that.
So it's interesting. So with that book, that when is it coming out? Would it be sort of a sequel to Dopesick? I know when I got done reading Dopesick, I was like, man, I need a happy ending or something. But when is that coming out? And will there be some bright spots in there about what people are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great way to put it. It really is a sequel to Dopesick. So I continue following the Purdue storyline through the bankruptcy. And I tell that story from the perspective of the people fighting back with that and trying to get the families and voices heard. And then I take about four or five different communities in America. Some are handling their problems well, others not. And I'm trying to write about how we make social change in this country, whether it's the Fairfax jail that just happened to have a super fired up sheriff who was all about fixing this issue, to a bureaucrat in rural North Carolina who starts offering treatment, but in a much tougher place. He has many more barriers to face because in rural North Carolina, people still don't want to treat people with OUD as patients. You see, healthcare and criminal justice are basically determined by local officials. It's the local sheriff runs everything in the county. The local hospital can decide whether or not that they're going to treat OUD in the ER. We're lucky in that Roanoke really stepped up with leadership. We had a ED director named Dr. John Burton, who told me in 2017, he didn't think to treat people with medication-assisted treatment in the ERs, of that wasn't in his purview, and it was just furthermore treating a drug addiction with another drug. Then he changed his mind after reading my book and doing his own research, and now they're doing it. They've got 450 people into treatment, a 70% success rate. They're super proud of it. They are like the number one spokespeople for medication-assisted treatment. I love the way change ripples out, but I'm very frustrated that it takes so long for it to ripple out. Again, it's all politics. It's all politics.
I'm Gene Marino. We're talking with Roanoke author Beth Macy, the former Roanoke Times reporter. She wrote Dopesick, and she also helped write and produce the Hulu miniseries Dopesick, based on her book. By the way, is MAT, is it becoming more of an accepted treatment at this point?
Well, it should be, and it is in most cities, but there's still most rehabs in America don't allow it. I mean, they'll give you all kinds of reasons why they don't, from we don't have a doctor on staff to we don't believe in it because we believe in abstinence-only models. You know, most drug courts don't allow it. and that's just wrong. It's because the judges want to cling to their power and don't want to bring a healthcare person on their team. You know, in places where that happens, I tell the story in the new book, Raising Lazarus, about a drug court judge in Tennessee who has reduced crime by over a third in his community and reduced overdoses by the simple act of letting the healthcare provider decide whether somebody goes on MAT, and most of them do, and most of them get better. So OUD is a treatable problem. You see so much hopelessness, and that's why I wanted to tell the story.
I'm helping you. I'm saving you from wasting your time. The FDA, justice, the doctors, they all want their drugs, and Big Pharma will spend everything they can to make sure that they get them. And this is just going to keep going and going until we're all just one big pill-popping zombie nation.
Just to wrap up, what do you hope that people that watch Dopesick, the series, come away with, and maybe some of them pick up the book again? Is there anything you really hope that comes out of this from the miniseries?
So it's really three things. I wanted people in the urban centers to understand that Appalachia isn't some monolith. I really bent over backwards to make sure that weren't Appalachian stereotypes in the show. Secondly, that message of MAT and medication-assisted treatment, methadone and buprenorphine are the gold standards of care. It's a little wonky to go into detail, but our show does it in a really interesting, entertaining way. And so you see people being stigmatized for being on it, and you see how dangerous that is. So we have a real clear, strong message, especially in the last few episodes about that. And then lastly, just I wanted people to understand that many of these folks were addicted initially because of Purdue's actions, i.e. through no fault of their own. And I want people to understand that these are human beings, they're our family members, and they're worthy of care.